You're with Rick Munn on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, we are into our number three. Imagine that, how time flies when you're having fun. I don't know if you've been listening for the last 2 hours. If you have, I doff my cap to you because it's been pretty heavy going in certain places, but we try and keep it a little bit lighthearted. We try and inject a little dose of humor, and I don't mean to use the injection metaphor here, but you know what I'm trying to get at. It's a touchy subject at the moment, given what's happening at the world with the old jibby jab. You know what I'm talking about. So yeah, Jody Newell was kind enough to beam in from Arizona in the first hour. Kat Lindley, Dr. Kat Lindley, joined us from Croatia. And now, yes, we have the one and only Mr. Roger Tattersall joining me from good old Blighty via France, because he's been sunning himself as he's prone to do during the summer months, and he's back with a nice tan and his hair's grown a little bit longer as well, by the way, I might add, and he's looking rather dashing, let me just say. I hope when I get to your age, Roger, I look as dashing as you do, but I don't think that's going to happen somehow. So before we invite him back formally to take the stand, some news items that are making the news today. Fracking ban has been lifted, the government in the UK announces. So the fracking ban has been lifted, so they can now frack to their little hearts are content. That should go some way towards alleviating the energy woes that we have here in the United Kingdom. The real living wage rise will help workers as costs soar. Unless you're getting 20-25% pay increase, it's not going to, it'll help, but it won't even be keeping up with inflation. Earthquake level set for a review to allow fracking to happen. So they're already starting to talk about fracking will cause earthquakes. You know, when I was a kid, my mom told me that if everyone in the world jumped up at the same time and down, that it would cause all the buildings in China to fall over, okay? It was a lie, okay? So fracking will not cause tectonic plates to move, especially if they're doing it on a localized area in England. Please give me a break. Liz Truss, yeah, we're gonna talk about Liz Truss a little bit here. Scotland's student nursing intake is 1,000 short of target. That's not a problem. Philippines, India, Pakistan, full of nurses, just chomping at the bit, waiting to get in. And of course, all those people we're bringing in from Algeria and Ukraine, there's got to be a few, savvy nurses in there, I would have imagined. They're not just all going to be sitting in the house, not contributing to the economy, I would imagine. So yeah, Scotland's coming up short of 1,000 nurses. That's a lot. You know, if I was set a recruitment target by TNT Radio to say, Rick, we need you to recruit 50 guests, and I thought, well, I've only got one. You know, I'm falling pretty short of the mark. If you're missing the mark by 1,000, someone should lose their job, I would have thought. Universal credit rules to be tightened under the Chancellor's plans. Tightened. Imagine a sponge or a face cloth wet. You wring it out. You think all the water's gone, then you fold it again and you wring it even harder until there's not a drop left. That's what the government looks like at you, as a sponge to be wrung out until you are bone dry. It doesn't matter who you are or where you live, they want to wring you out and hang you out to dry. But what do I know? This is TNT Radio. I know that much. We have a website, tntradio.live. On that website, irrespective of where you live, we will promote any events that you are facilitating or enabling, get-togethers, rallies, protests, etc. Contact the website, tntradio.live, submit your details. We have a What's On calendar that's available for anyone to see. So no matter where you are in the world, what you're doing, or if you're in an area and you're wondering what's happening, check out our events section on our TNT Radio website. And yeah, let's make the world a better place. Let's work in partnership on TNT Radio.
Stream us anywhere.
I listen on Alexa.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Mr. Tattersall is back from his travels in France, and he was tormenting me, let me just say, over the last few weeks, sending me pictures of beautiful green fields and blue skies and the odd glass of wine here and there. Why did you have to do that when I'm looking out at nothing but misery and drizzle? Are you a wicked man? Are you a globalist? Are you want to tell me something?
Well,
today?
I'm not a globalist, Rick, but I am a wicked man, and I will continue to taunt you. Photographs of wonderful places that I go to, but I'm glad to be back. Nice. Glad to be back in the seat here opposite you at TNT. Thanks for asking me on again.
It's good to see you again. And listen, it's been about, I think, if this is sad that I can remember this, I think you departed on Friday, the 26th of August, if I'm not mistaken. I had it down in my diary, and I thought it's going to be a month before I get to talk to him again. But hey. What a month it's been, eh? On the old news front, my goodness, where do we even start?
I've been glad to be away, Rick. I've tried to ignore it for the most part.
How was France, by the way? Did you have a good break?
Had a lovely break, thank you. Yes, bit of work as well as play. Working on our Petite Ruine down there in Brittany that we bought for a song 5-6 years ago. So the land had a lot of work to do on the land because it had been neglected for quite a while over the COVID times. So yeah, lots of mowing and clipping and strimming and all that kind of stuff. But we also got away down to the coast, as you saw from those lovely photos. It's wonderful down there. And also we were able to afford to put our electric hot water heater on to make some bath water because the prices in France are capped by the government. They've had to basically nationalize their largest energy producer to do it. But you are in a better situation in France than England at the moment with regards to energy bills. So that was a welcome break as well. Awfully cold getting back to the UK the other day, and we felt the chill a little bit, but I got the old wood burner going. So we still haven't used any gas over here.
Well, it's just as well because there's no escape. Even if you shop around, we Brits and Irish, we like to shop around. We like to think we're getting a good deal. Listen, there's no good deals to be had. You know, it's a case of which is the least bad deal on the market, not which is the best deal on the market. And, you know, since you've been gone and came back, you know, we've not only got a new prime minister, we've got a new monarch as well. So we've got in the same week, which I believe was unique in British history, for the first time ever, with the PM and the king/queen was replaced, not even in a week, in the space of what, three or four days. Truss was on Monday and then the Queen was on Thursday. So yeah, a lot's been going on. And Liz has been, how would you say, overshadowed somehow by the funeral and the send-off for the Queen and the aftermath of Charles becoming King. But now we're starting to see Liz emerge from the shadows, like a shadowy vampire almost waiting to sink her fangs into the UK. What do you make of Liz Truss? What do you make of this appointment?
Well, the first thing I noticed was that Liz, and so the timing was even tighter really with the sort of the royal and the political business there, because there was only a gap of about 2 hours between Liz Truss standing up in Parliament and saying that she was going to lift the ban on fracking in the UK. And within a couple of hours, the royal family were called up to Holyrood on the sad occasion that we heard that the Queen was unwell and that she was near the end. Mm-hmm. So that was, in a way, a good thing that she got that blow in before climate calamity Charlie became the King. Because, as you know, he's very much an eco kind of guy. He's been misled, unfortunately, by a lot of the so-called expert advisors that he's got about the whole climate issue and fossil fuels, etc. So he's naturally opposed to fracking. But Liz Truss had already got in there and announced the end to that moratorium on fracking, which is a good thing for energy security in the UK in the future. But I say in the future because energy policy is a big ship to turn around, and you start turning the wheel and the bow doesn't start swinging one way or the other for a good while afterwards, you know. So it's not going to make a difference straight away. People can't expect this to to go straight through into a better situation for their energy costs. So we're having to subsidize it. Who's going to subsidize it? The taxpayer. Who's paying the bills? The taxpayer. So they're taking money out of our pockets to put it back into our pockets and telling us that's a good way to go. I think Matt Letizier put up a very good tweet the other day. He said, well, your electricity bill's doubled. They said it was going to quadruple, but now they've rowed back on that and said it's only going to double. And so we should all be very grateful to them. Fact of the matter is your energy bills have doubled. So should we feel grateful
that's
for that?
That's what people are missing.
The terrible policies for the last 10 years. Well, maybe not.
That's what I think. You know, it's a classic example. I made a little video clip about this. When you go in to buy a car, you want to buy an electrical appliance. There's a markup built into the price that when you go through, if you're savvy enough and you'll say, well, like, you know, what's the best price you can do? What's the cash price you can do? What's the, you know, buying a washing machine and a tumble dryer and a microwave, what's the package deal? And they'll say, okay, Roger, we'll knock 10% off it. No, they've already factored that 10% in before you walk in the door. If you don't haggle, they make an extra 10% on top of their profit. If you do haggle, they still make their profit. It's the same principle. We were led to believe that prices would be spiking up to $3,500 a year in October, $4,500 a year in January, $7,000 a year by April if we were still alive and hadn't frozen to death. But now we're being told actually it's going to be $2,500 and it's going to be fixed for 2 years, and we're giving the energy companies $140 billion and you should be grateful. And sadly, a lot of people think it's bloody marvelous. They don't understand what's going on.
$240 billion are they
going
to give them, though? That's the question.
Exactly.
Is that our money?
Well, they're just,
the government
they're just
doesn't have money.
They don't have it. They're going to print. They're going to print. And then, of course, that's going to feed into the inflation. And
of
There's no way out of this, is there?
If they print more money, then inflation goes higher. So you're going to pay one way or the other for the bad policy decisions of the last decade and a half. And there's no way around that. And those chickens are coming home to roost. Frozen chickens. Frozen chickens, I should add. Not
they will be frozen.
Ones.
They will
That's
be frozen,
roost, not
especially
roast.
If they're landing over here in the winter time. They will certainly be frozen. Well, you know what? As you're talking, you know, we talked about this fracking, the fracking ban lifted just in the nick of time before Charlie passed on to take the throne. Obviously, he's not a fan, but we're led to believe that he's going to separate his political and green affiliations from his state duties. At least that's what he says he's going to do. He has to keep stum on this one, at least in public, but I'm sure he'll be making moves behind closed doors to try and nubble the fracking. You said changing energy policy is like turning a ship. So again, people will be jumping for joy at this news today. Oh, fantastic. Our energy problems are over. They're solved. No, they've only just decided to lift the ban. Then they have to actually start to do it and actually produce the energy. It's like that cottage of yours, that little fixer-upper that you have in France. You know, you said, you know, we got it for a song and I've been cutting the lawn and mowing and strimming and weeding and there's a lot of work to do. It's kind of like that with the fracking. You didn't just buy it and you're going to move in and have an ensuite and, you know, sit on the veranda at night, you know, sipping on your wine. You have to get through the weeds and the...
There weren't even any walls in the place when we bought it inside.
Well, there you go. There you go. It's your little fixer-up project is kind of like the lifting of the fracking ban. Whilst it's a good thing, it's not just going to be an instant turnaround and an instant win. A lot of time and effort is going to have to be invested in this before start to see any fruit. But is that not, should we not be somehow at least a little teensy bit optimistic that maybe they're starting to see the light here? You know, let's have a little bit of optimism.
Yeah, I hope so, Rick. I really, really hope so. And there are promising signs. I mean, one of the first people that Liz Truss sacked was Zach Goldsmith. Yeah, and he's one of the chief protagonists of the whole thing, although he doesn't seem to know much about it, really. I've interacted with him a bit on Twitter, and he doesn't seem to be very aware of a lot of the facts. So, you know, glad that he's gone. There's talk that that John Selwyn Gummer, a.k.a. Lord Devon, might be replaced as the leader on the Climate Change Committee, and that would be a good thing as well, because he's had his fingers in the pies for far too long. And I think that there is some common sense being forced onto government. With, I mean, you know, they're still paying lip service to saying, oh, yeah, we still want to achieve net zero by 2050, but we have to deal with the energy crisis right now. Of course, what they, you know, what should happen is that as they unwind this and the real knowledge of the science improves, or at least starts the message starts to get through and we can get past the censorship, then they'll start to realize that, that the whole carbon dioxide scare is really a false scare, and that it's time to move past that and get realistic again and sensible with energy security, which is incredibly important, especially with the announcement yesterday by President Vladimir Putin of Russia that he's going to mobilize another 300,000 troops because of the way things are ramping up in the Ukraine. So, you know, this is bad enough news for us. It's even worse news for Germany because you know, they're far more dependent on Russian gas, or have been, than we have been. We've most of our imports have come from Norway.
They have. And
whereas in Germany, they've become increasingly reliant on Russian natural gas and oil in the past. And since the sanctions were put on a few months ago at the outbreak of the trouble in Ukraine, they've really cut their own noses off to spite their faces. And it's doing enormous damage to the German economy, which will then have a huge knock-on effect throughout the Eurozone and the European Union, since it's the principal economy that keeps a lot of the others afloat.
It is.
Especially
it is.
Now that Britain sensibly left in 2019. So, you know, it's time to really look at the real political situation as it stands across the world, and the real financial situation, which, because wealth is not based on the printing of money, wealth is not based on banknotes. Wealth is based on minerals and oil and gas and aluminium and steel and you know, commodities
zinc
that actually have intrinsic value. And especially, especially in these modern times, lithium, nickel, cobalt, and these things that they want to make their electric toys with. So, you know, and guess where most of that comes from? Well, yeah, Russia's holding a lot of the world's nickel reserves too. You know,
Well, do you know what we'll do? All the things that you have just mentioned there, I wanna after we take this short break, I wanna start picking them apart one by one, because it all kind of links in with Truss's appointment. How will that affect the ongoing support for Ukraine? How will it affect the possibility of going nuclear? How will it affect our energy strategy going forward? So we'll take a quick pause. We'll listen to some ads. And when we come back, we'll look at the old jungle drums, the old war drums that are beating at the minute. And it's not a nice sound, by the way. It doesn't sound too good to these ears. But hey, what can you do? It is what it is. We can just analyze it, and hopefully it won't turn out to be as catastrophic as predicted. But time will tell. We'll look at that when we come back after the ads here on TNT Radio.
Jeremy Beck on TNT Radio.
Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has walked back an election promise to legislate a new federal anti-corruption commission by year's end, saying that the government's pledge is only to introduce the bill to Parliament. Now, I suppose they're worried about the lost sitting days arising from the official period of mourning of Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, and that would take out a bit of time there. But I really don't think the Corruption Commission would necessarily stop corruption, just the same as a Royal Commission doesn't necessarily stop problems even after hours and hours and thousands of hours of going through all sorts of scandals in the past. The corruption just keeps happening over and over again. Call me cynical, but that just seems to be the case.
Jeremy Beck on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
The story behind the biggest election takeover in history.
We're only now being able to finally confirm exactly how this worked.
Mark Zuckerberg and his wife are donating more money to local governments ahead of the election. $100 million on top of a $300 million gift.
The most money any individual has ever spent to win a presidential campaign in the history of our country.
The election was bought way before Election Day.
They stole it fair and square. They changed the voting rules in the middle of the game.
A nation divided, rigged.
It was a rigged election. People have to find out what happened.
At SalemNow.com.
Aussie parents risk criminalization if they don't affirm their child's gender identity. The world has gone nuts. Lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
The world is really genuinely going nuts. We've been talking for months now, you know, speculating about the conflict in Ukraine, how it might develop. We speculated about who might be PM. You know, Liz Truss's name came up in the conversation, and lo and behold, here she is occupying number 10. If you cast your mind back, not so long ago, she appeared on, was it Andre Marr or Jeremy Vine? I don't know, or Jeremy somebody. He's talking about if young British men felt the urge to pick up arms, bear arms, and go and be mercenaries in Ukraine and fight Putin's war machine, that she would be fully supportive of that. Did that not, was she not really setting her stall out at that point in time as to what direction she would be taking in terms of conflict, lack of resolution, enabling it, supporting, pledging another $2.3 billion until the end of 2023 in arms? We must stand. The price of energy is a price to pay for our freedom, and so on and so forth. What do you make of her warmongering? She's a warmonger, isn't she?
Well, you know, I don't know whether she personally is a warmonger, but what I do know is that Britain has forever and a day followed American foreign policy, because we have very close trading ties with the US. So even though we don't currently have a free trade agreement ironed out with them, nonetheless, you know, we do a lot of trade with the States. They and we have been allies for an awfully long time. I just sometimes wonder whether in Washington D.C. and the Pentagon, whether they've really sort of, have they forgotten all the military history that they learned, you know, sort of from the Second World War, and how it was that the Russians defeated the German armies on the Eastern Front, because this is a massive undertaking. Now, there's big, huge global stakes in play here, isn't there? You know, there's the idea is that America and its European allies, they want to actually break up the Russian Federation into a load of small states, because then they can pick them off one by one, and they can get in there, and they can get the nickel on the terms that they want. They can get the gas and oil on the terms that they want. And Vladimir Putin, equally on the other side, is determined to keep the Russian Federation together so that it is a global-sized player in the big stakes world of realpolitik and geopolitics. And so he has been courting China, India, Iran, Brazil, and these kind of countries which aren't so closely aligned to NATO, or aren't aligned at all to NATO. And they actually are the majority, certainly, you know, in big terms, in population terms, and in the size of these countries. So we are, you know, Putin's determined to see a multipolar world. America wants to see a world where the dollar continues to dominate and can buy whatever the Americans want, including allegiance. And the Americans are putting a lot of pressure on the Germans not to turn on that Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline. And likewise, I'm sure they've been putting plenty of pressure on the British to fully support the effort in Ukraine to try and do a lot of damage to Putin's standing in the Russian Federation, within the Russian Federation. And this is where it becomes a bit of a kind of a battle of propagandas, because the Americans and others successfully have brought about a change of regime in quite a few countries over the last few decades through what they call color revolutions, using propaganda, using the internet, using this kind of psychological means to get populations to turn against their own incumbent governments and insist on a change. And this is big stakes, dangerous stuff, particularly if you're going to go after Russia itself with this, because, you know, we all know that Russia is armed to the teeth, just like America is, with nuclear weapons, but also in terms of conventional forces and manpower.
Yeah.
The Russians, as we heard in the news at the top of the hour, that, you know, they're going to bring in another 300,000 who do have the specialist skills and the military training requisite for the efforts in Ukraine. But they also have, in the Russian Federation, another 25 million people who have done military service, you know, who they could call on if necessary. Now, that's one heck of an army when you compare it to the size of the British army these days, which is, what, I don't know, 80,000?
It's scary. You know,
25 million is a big number, isn't it?
It's humongous. And here's the thing. I mean, nobody in their right mind wants a conflict, especially one that could escalate and go nuclear. You know, because of mutually assured destruction, that's the reason why there hasn't been any nuclear wars up until this time. Because effectively, if it really kicks off, no one wins. We're all reduced to a pile of ice, your little shadows burnt onto the pavement. So that's not going to profit anyone. So I don't think they're going to go that far, but certainly sabers are being rattled. I want to look at this development. Let's stay on the Russia conflict potential to go nuclear. After we've got to take a quick news break here. It's only 30 seconds, but when we come back from that, we'll develop this line of thought a little bit further, just to say, you know, what are the possibilities here? What could happen? What's not going to happen? Obviously, just our own thoughts and opinions. But yeah, it's good to talk about these things because people want to know. They're always asking, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? What do you think is going to happen? So we're going to tell you when we come back after the news here on TNT Radio.
Darren Metzer here with a look at your TNT headlines. Former US President Donald Trump has spoken out after being sued by the New York State Attorney General. One-way flights out of Russia are selling out fast, after President Vladimir Putin began mobilizing reserve troops to fight in Ukraine. And popular conservative video-sharing platform, Rumble, went public on the stock market on Monday, through a deal with a blank check firm that'll see the value of the business surge above $2 billion.
God, you're amazing. You're a much better listener than my wife. You're always there for me. I think I may be in love.
Where is she?
It's not what it seems. I was talking to...
Who's the tramp I heard you talking to?
That was my Alexa, sweetie.
Well, she sounds like a tramp.
Fall in love with news and talk all over again with your smart device. Just tell it to play.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, as we were talking about Liz Truss, you know, you made a good point. You know, is she a warmonger? Listen, I believe Joe Biden is not making the calls for policy in America. He's just reading off his auto cue. He's just a shoo-in. He's an old puppet. Same with Liz Truss. You know, no disrespect. When you look at Liz Truss, you don't think she's capable of running the country and dealing with this. She's handled with her advisors and people behind the scenes. I get that. But she is kind of the mouthpiece. Putin is talking about these 300K troops, another 25 million in reserve. They've got vast nuclear capabilities. And listen, you know, you can see the point that, you know, NATO was really encroaching on expanding over the last however many years since the, you know, the Soviet Union broke up instead of disbanding. You get where he's coming from. You get that he feels maybe like a cornered dog. And, you know, I don't know about you, but when a dog's in a corner and he's baring his teeth, you don't poke at him, do you? You don't poke at him.
Well, poking the Russian bear with a stick has never been a great idea. And as the Second World War showed us, you know, the Russians are very determined, you know, that they're not going to be overrun by anybody. And so, you know, I don't think the West can hope to overcome on the ground militarily, you know, field by field, trench by trench. They can't overcome Russia. But what they hope to do is topple its regime and break up the Russian Federation into the small states of which it's got, the smaller states of which it's composed. Some of them are pretty big in their own right. But this is the thing, that the Russian public, it's hard to know what their mood is. I mean, you know, you can't really, just like you can't trust the polling in the UK, you know, when they give you, give you poll results, you can't trust it in Russia either. So what the Russian public is thinking about all of this, we don't really know. But I suspect that they are pretty patriotic people, that they are aware, keenly aware of what happened in the Second World War and the amount of sacrifice they had to make to maintain the integrity of their motherland. And there's no doubt in my mind that that they would stand up and do it again. And as to the question of, you know, NATO expanding and expanding, well, you know, it was back in 92, the promises were made when Gorbachev kind of, you know, took down the Soviet system and opened things up with glasnost and perestroika, you know, the openness and the change. He was assured, you know, by his Western counterparts, NATO won't expand to the east. You know, you'll still have your territorial security. And look at what's happened since. You know, they're trying to get Georgia to become, talking about Georgia becoming a member of NATO. You know, they're talking about Ukraine becoming a member of NATO. And now Finland, you know, which is on a direct border with Russia, becoming a member of NATO. So
you talk about Russia.
Absolutely, anathema to Moscow. And again, Putin is a dove compared to a lot of the people behind him. You know, you get rid of Putin, you're going to get some far more hardline people who are going to be totally more threatening. So,
and the other thing is,
it's a real failure of diplomacy going on here.
Well, that's the thing. I think the first casualty, Roger, in this whole thing was diplomacy. Diplomacy was not looked upon as a viable option. They went straight to sanctions, and things have spiraled since then. And it's like you were talking there about, Gorbachev was promised, okay, we're not going to expand to the east. It's all over. We don't need this anymore. And then look where we're at now. It's like this. You talked about Russia in the Second World War, and obviously Operation Barbarossa, where Hitler attacked them. I mean, he visited Stalin not long before that, and just said, "I assure you, we will never march. We will never attack. We will." Next thing, they're knocking on the door with the old, the old Messerschmitt.
Hardly surprising that Russia doesn't trust Europe or the US, really. You know, The other factor in this is that historically Ukraine wasn't really a country until it got defined as one by various external forces imposing borders into it. Poland had a go, Hungary, the Austro-Hungarian Empire had a go, the Lithuanian Empire had a go. You wouldn't believe such a tiny country used to be part of a bigger empire. But and also Russia, when Ukraine kind of became Soviet territory, Russia said, well, to make it a viable country that can have that can kind of account for itself economically, we'll tack on this area in the east called the Donbass, you know, Luhansk and Donetsk, where there's a lot of the industry, there's a lot of the minerals, there's the good farmland, you know, it's the richer end of Ukraine. And so the Soviets added that on and defined it as being part of the Ukrainian Soviet Socialist Republic. And so that it became an entity. But it was never really a cohesive country. It's always had this ethnic division between Galicians, who were sort of more kind of come from the sort of Austro-Hungarian and Polish side, and the Russians, who occupy the eastern and southern part of Ukraine and the Crimea. And so it was never going to be easy. But by and large, you know, sort of through the late 90s and early 2000s, the efforts were made to sort of keep the country together. But it's become more and more hard line from Kiev in the West, you know, saying we're not going to let you teach Russian in schools. We're going to insist, you know, that you submit to our kind of curriculum and so on. And of course, the Russian people don't like that. Why would they? You know, the Russian people who live in the east of the country say, hey, you know, you can't ban our language. I mean, imagine England trying to ban Welsh, you know, tomorrow. I mean, how would that go down with the Welsh? So it's not surprising that these Russian people in the east, the eastern area, have rebelled against this and said, well, we're not having that. If you're going to try and insist on that, we'll go UDI. So they went UDI. Kiev started throwing shells at them and ramped it up a lot just in the week before Putin actually went in. the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, which was keeping a close eye on what was going on that frontier in the Donbass, said that the number of shells being lobbed in from the western side increased from about 200 a day to about 1,400 a day for the week before Putin actually said, right, enough of this, we're going in. So the question of who actually started this war is a moot one. And for that reason, there ought to be diplomacy. And Putin talked with Zelensky, and they were getting close to getting some kind of agreement until Boris Johnson arrived Zelensky, no, you know, you have to tell them you're not going to negotiate for this. You want the Donbass back. You have to tell him that, otherwise you won't get the backing from the West. So, you know, that's how the West turned it into a proxy war against Russia. And that's where we are now. And, you know, we've got
that's a brilliant summary, by the way. Let me just doff my cap to you. That's a damn fine summary of everything that's been going on generally in that area since 2014, since the regime change there that was ultimately, you know, initiated by America, until the position that we're in now. Because a lot of people just don't know. They don't know why they're fighting. They don't know the background to it. All they know is everything that they've been told post February 2022. So I'm glad you covered that. The background, the division, the ethnicity, etc., and the history of the country, because a lot of people, we're very insular, aren't we? You know, we tend to only, unless you have an interest in world events and politics and world history in general, people tend to only know about where they are and what they're about, or what they have been told that they're about and what they've been told that they are. So it's good to know why we've reached this position. Rather than just discussing what might happen going forward, it's important to understand how we got to be here in the first place.
We've got five
minutes coming up to another little break, right? And this business of, you know, it's always been in the background of people's heads about nuclear war. And I'm not warmongering, by the way, and I'm not fearmongering. I don't think there's going to be an all-out nuclear war. I don't. But it's cropping up more and more in conversation now. The nuclear business is being talked about more. And even Liz Truss, when she was asked, what are your views? Would you be hesitant to pull the trigger or to press the button? She said, nope. As a PM of England or Britain and UK, if I was under threat, I would not hesitate. So she's making her position clear. I will not hesitate. And Putin is making his position clear. We will not hesitate. And even old sleepy Joe Biden was on 60 Minutes and he was making veiled threats towards Russia, saying there would be retaliation, which they can't even conceive of. So they're certainly ratcheting up the rhetoric when it comes to leaning towards the nuclear thing. You know, what do you make of that?
Well, you know, there's obviously no point in having these weapons if you're not prepared to use them. And so that's why any head of state or, you know, well, premier, as Liz Truss is, is going to have to say that. They've got to say that. Otherwise, it completely negates the whole point of the strategy of deterrence. Now, a lot of people might say, well, put deterrence and mutually assured destruction alongside each other and the whole thing makes no logical sense anyway. It's utter lunacy. You know, and that's an argument for another day. I'm fairly pragmatic in my views about these things.
Yeah.
And I think that we're unlikely to see an all-out nuclear war, very unlikely. And so there are the questions then of, well, what about these small-scale nuclear weapons, you know, what so they're called tactical or battlefield nuclear weapons? Yeah. What about those? What about these nuclear power plants that have been coming under shelling? You know, like the one that the Russians control, Zaporizhia, in southern Ukraine. They've been in control of it for months and months. They've been accused by the West of shelling it themselves to make the West look bad. Well, the Russians are saying, no. It's actually the Ukrainians who are lobbing them over the reservoir from where this place is, and chucking shells in that are endangering the integrity of that power plant, and I think they've shut it down. Actually, they're not actually generating electricity there at the moment. And there's a lot of nuclear fuel stored at that plant as well in cooling tanks that have to be kept cool, and they need power to keep those cool. And so, you know, there's a danger in a war like this that this infrastructure could become damaged in such a way that you end up not with a purpose-built nuclear weapon, but a whopping great dirty bomb, a la Chernobyl. And if that happens, then, you know, that would be devastating, not only for Ukraine, but also for, you know, Russia and Europe and, you know, anywhere where the radiation can spread to. So, you know, there is a very serious situation. I believe that they do now have some observers in that nuclear power plant from the International Atomic Energy Authority. And I think it was they who recommended shutting down the last two reactors so that, you know, it's not generating at the moment. But Zelensky was relying on selling electricity from that plant into Europe to try and hold up his balance of trade, you know, because this war is costing Ukraine, you know, $5-6 billion a month. And the country can't sustain that. It's going to end up as a broke basket case. And no doubt certain Western companies diving in there to buy up large amounts of farmland and so on for pennies on the dollar. And we know that's likely to happen because we've seen it happen before. And so there's a lot of cynicism in all of this. It's not just about ideology and, you know, that Russians are evil and the West is good. It's not about that. It's about the real politic of resources and the real politic of who gets to own things and rent stuff to other
people. Isn't that what it's always about? Isn't that what it's, no matter what the conflict, if you really break it down to bare bones, it's a bit like science these days. If you want to understand science, you got to follow the money. If you want to understand conflict, I say you got to follow the resources. If it's not the breadbasket of Europe, grain, oil, it's zinc, it's lithium, Congo. These places are targeted because of their resources, their oil supplies, their gas supplies, and so on and so forth. Very good point. Very good point. I like these points you're making today. By the way, I'm listening to you a lot, and I'm formulating ideas and plans. We've got to take another quick ad break, Roger. And when we come back, we'll dip our toe in the pond of economics, maybe, because obviously that's something that's affecting us here in the UK and Ireland as well. Economics, interest rates are imminent. Set to rise. Inflation's not going south anytime soon. Stimulus payments for energy may be coming in December or whatever, 100 quid in Northern Ireland, 400. Is it going to matter? Is it going to be a drop in the bucket? We'll dig into that when we come back after these short ads here on TNT Radio.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
Remember when Donald Trump labeled the coronavirus involved in the COVID outbreak the China virus? Racist, cried the leftist media. How dare Trump attach the name of a country or a region to a virus? Well, you see, they never heard of German measles, Japanese encephalitis, Spanish flu, Middle East respiratory syndrome, or the others that had already existed. Now we have this. The GRIO reports that advocates, including the Black LGBTQ plus civil rights group National Black Justice Coalition, have expressed concerns about the virus known as monkeypox. The organization has been calling for it to be referred to by its acronym MPV. They say that the name monkeypox is stigmatizing and causes harm to the black community by, quote, upholding white supremacy consciously or otherwise, end quote. Last week, White House spokesperson Karine Jean-Pierre weighed in saying, "We understand, and I know so many other communities understand how a name of a virus can really cause harm to that community. I'm sure the administration will not only change the name, but hold a White House ceremony when they do it." Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
You only put your son to bed 1 hour ago, and he's woken up saying his tummy really hurts and he's got a temperature. You're worried. The 111 person you normally speak to isn't available. The surgery's closed. It's not an emergency, but you're not sure what to do. Then you remember the new free 24-hour NHS number, 111. They assess you and direct you straight away to the medical help you need. Your 111 relieved mum.
If it's not a 999 emergency but you need medical help fast, there's now 111 number to call. When it's less urgent than 999, call 111. Now available on the Isle of Wight.
Claims that renewables are cheap or will lower prices are proven false. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Okay, I'm wrapping it up today with my old chum Roger Tattersall. I nearly called him Roger Tallbloke. That's his Twitter handle, at Rog, R-O-G-T-A-L-L-B-L-O-K-E, at Rog Tallbloke. Please follow him on Twitter. Very straightforward breakdowns of all these climate hypotheses and arguments and giving the right angles at them. Check him out on Twitter. And also, he has a WordPress site, tallbloke.wordpress.com. So anyway, that's a little bit of housekeeping that I should have taken care of right at the start of the show. I'm terrible for that. I keep saying I'm going to change it. I keep saying I'm going to be more professional. But talk is cheap, Rick. You need to do it. So anyway, better late than never. Roger, the economy, where on earth do we start with the economy? Interest rates look set to rise at least three more times by a total of, what are they banding, about 2 percentage points, a 0.75 hike, a 0.75 hike, and another 0.5 hike. This is coming. Inflation still going up. Liz Truss, again, let's drag her back into the conversation again. She's printing money, subsidizing energy companies. Yeah, it's not looking particularly hot. And if you follow currencies, you'll have noted that the pound is pushing, well, it's actually heading towards parity with the dollar at the minute. It's dropping like a stone, the pound against the dollar. What do you make of all this? Is it a little blip, or is it going to go sub-parity? Maybe, I don't know. What do you think?
Well, you know, it's not only the pound, it's the euro as well. The euro's in probably even worse trouble than sterling is, has already dropped below parity with the dollar. And given the economic woes in Germany, with their industrial economy being hit by not getting the cheap gas and so on from Russia anymore, that's really going to affect things. And of course, the whole of Europe, and Britain is still part of Europe, although we're not in the EU anymore. Britain is still part of Europe. We do a lot of trade, and if there's less people, got less money to buy things, then we can't sell as much, and so everybody loses, and that's just how it is. And I think that another couple of percentage points on interest rates it's going to hurt companies that have got loans, small businesses. It's going to hurt a lot of households struggling with mortgage payments. Uh-huh. And this is your good old-fashioned recession, except it's worse. It's stagflation, isn't it? You've got inflation at the same time. You haven't got inflation because the economy is roaring away and needs cooling down. You've got inflation, but you've also got an economy that's almost tipping into recession. And that's a very bad place to be. It reminds you of sort of, 1929 and the big crash in the States. And that's something that they want to try and avoid. And they're trying to avoid it by making a situation such that Europe will have to rely on the US for energy. And so you'll get these big value exports of liquid natural gas. How good an idea is that? How good is that for energy security? Well, there's a lot of Russian submarines in the Atlantic. If things get really tasty with this escalation of this conflict in Ukraine, then could we rely on those LNG tankers making it across? So there's a question. Yeah. Another question is, there are only 500 of these LNG tankers in the world, and they've all got fully booked order books for delivering LPG all over the world. So how much spare capacity can be drummed up to deliver LNG to Europe from the States? Then you've got the fact that, well, they haven't actually built the LNG terminals in Europe yet to receive these huge amounts of liquid natural gas and store it, and then decompress, and then turn it into grid gas, sort of gaseous form that can be pumped around and used. So, all these questions, how quickly can you do this stuff? No, none of the politicians are talking about it because they're probably aghast at the answers they're getting when they ask these questions of the people who know, who are the engineers, who've been largely ignored for the last 20 years.
Yeah, it's like the fracking thing, or as you give the analogy, it's like turning an oil tanker. When you change energy policy, it's not like a switch that goes on and off with your lights in the house. these things take time to turn. So LNG strategy, the infrastructure's not, they don't have the capacity to transport what they needed to. And even if they did, they don't have the storage facilities to store it before they can turn it into, you know, gaseous form to be used in homes. So again, is this not another case of, okay, even if you table the solution to the problem, it's still going to take a long time to get it implemented, and in the meantime, we still have the problem. So it's a grim scenario, really, isn't it?
And that's why it's a bit of a poor outlook for the economy, you know, and the economy in Europe generally, you know, the UK, Eurozone, and that is how it is. And I don't have any instant answers to how to solve that. You know, I can recognise the problems and enunciate those clearly. In the hope that the politicians will go, whoa, the jig's up. People know what's going on and they're talking about it. We're going to have to do something about it. So that's what we try to do, you and I, when we discuss these issues. Yeah. You know, let's try and get the public aware of this and making a noise about it to their own local politicians. Write to your MP, ask them what the hell they're playing at. You know, put the wind up them. It's got to be done. But if we get fracking, I mean, I was saying 6 years ago, at a conference, we should be starting fracking now because we want to ramp it up very slowly and gently so that we can develop a homegrown industry, so that we're getting the benefit of new high-skilled jobs for our own young people, training them up in these highly skilled professions, engineering-wise. And also then we have our own teams, our own equipment, manufacture the equipment ourselves. That would revive our steel industry, you know, all the extra benefits you can get by planning this correctly far enough in advance, rather than having to do it in a hurry and get American teams over here to do the fracking because they're the ones with you know, with the most know-how experience and the most spare equipment. And so, you know, we need to, even if we're starting right now and we do have to call in a couple of American teams, we ought to be building our own homegrown industry. We ought to be turning some of our own engineering capability away from building weapons for the Middle East and towards, instead of, you know, using those weapons in the Middle East by proxy to sort of guard the oil supplies from the Middle East, we should be developing our own capability to get our own hydrocarbons from under our own soil. It's a far more secure thing to do in the long run, and also has a peace dividend, because a lot of the reason for terrorism that's come in from the Middle East, you know, is because of the way people end up over there in conflicts that are really proxy conflicts caused by Western policies. So there's a peace dividend there available to us if we would only recognize it and take it, and we could see less terrorism happening in the West. We could be safer and more secure with our energy. We could deal with Putin on equal terms and say, all right, back in your box, mate. You know, enough of the game's over. We've got our own energy, so we're not reliant on you. So, you know, and then the Russian economy, which has been doing quite nicely, thank you, off the huge profits from the inflated hydrocarbon prices, would then simmer down, and Putin would have to become more diplomatic in the way that we can eventually reach an agreement and a settlement about Ukraine. So, you know, that's kind of how I see it. Looking to the future.
Got a question for you.
Go ahead.
Why aren't you prime minister? Seriously,
well, you know,
why?
The last time I stood for parliament, Rick, I stood for parliament in 2016. I did pretty well, actually, considering it was a two-horse race. You know, it was a bellwether swing marginal seat, my own seat here up here in the outskirts of Leeds. And I managed to get 8,000 votes, and both the Lib Dems and the Greens lost their deposits. So you know, I came in a very strong third compared to the other parties.
I could never win it.
But you know, I think it's time we formed the Not Zero Party, Rick.
And
we'll democratically decide who should lead that.
I'm listening. All joking aside, and we're up to 10, but you know, I'm listening to you and you're articulating points on energy, on climate, on geopolitics, on conflict, etc., resolution, nuclear, and so on and so forth. You know, I dare say if I was to get Liz Truss, if she agrees to come on the show, you know, I think she's running from me. But if she was agreeing to come on to the show, she wouldn't be able to articulate things the way that you do. And that's a fact. So I'm sort of joking.
Get
but
us
I'm
both
also
on together,
sort of,
Rick. Get us both on together if you can.
Imagine,
I'd love to have a chat
with that. Well, listen, let's try and make it happen. I'll get my people to reach out to her people and maybe we can make it happen. Liz, if you're listening, I know you like to listen in between whatever else it is you do during your day. Roger's throwing down the gauntlet. I hope you want to pick it up. And if you do, let's have it out on the forum of TNT Radio. Roger, we are up to time, my good friend. And listen, it's been an absolute pleasure again. You're a legend.
Well, thanks for asking me back, Rick. Thanks for asking me back. It's always
pleasure.
It's always good to chat with you.
Pleasure. And listen, let's stay in touch and we'll see what the next few weeks brings. That was Roger Tattersall. I'm Rick Munn. That was Jeff in the studio doing a sterling job. Patrick Henningsen's locked and loaded on his way. Don't go away. I'll be back tomorrow on TNT Radio.